Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Season 2 of True Crime Tuesday. And this season, we're going to take a look at false flags. Now, you'll have heard the term used before, but you may not know fully what it means. You may also be asking yourself, how does a false flag end up on a true crime podcast? Well, because it's a crime, basically. And we're only going to focus on false flag operations that have been proven to be true. But before we start our second season, and I can't wait to get into this with you, I need to do a bit of an explanation regarding Season 1. As many of you have pointed out, there were only 9 episodes of a supposed 10-episode season. Well, the reason before that, you may recall halfway through the season, I received a legal challenge, so to speak, by people I can't even mention now. I'm not a journalist, and I'm certainly no expert on legal challenges. So at my own cost, I had a solicitor look into what I'd received, and the upshot was, according to the solicitor, the pursuant had legal authority to receive each episode that I'd recorded before I released it, and then they had the okay to give it clearance to air. One episode, which was recorded and uploaded and set to release at a given time, apparently resulted in my solicitor receiving a command to not air the episode or face legal proceedings. So that episode didn't air. Even this paragraph has been checked by the pursuant when I said to my solicitor, I'll need to explain that missing episode. And that's the heavily amended explanation. And that's as much as I can legally say. Why examining an alternate theory is cause for what we went through for Season 1 is in itself, well, I certainly don't want to pay any more solicitor fees, so let's just say I wonder if the same would have happened if it was a show proving the moon was made of cheese. I don't think so. Anyway, Season 2, False Flags. Now, as I say, you'll have heard this term before, but often things are mixed in with false flag conversations that aren't false flags. Not that they're any less abhorrent. So, for example, governmentally approved hidden experiments, they become part of a conversation normally. But the two, whilst equally criminal in my book, are quite different indeed. Understanding that distinction between a false flag operation and those hidden experiments involves examining their definitions, purposes, methods, and impacts. Both involve deception by authorities to you, but they differ significantly in their objective and the nature of their actions. But before we do anything, I need to thank our wonderful people over on Patreon. Now, when you sign up to Patreon, not only do you receive all of our episodes on this feed, both early and ad-free, but you will also receive our bi-weekly podcast, Cold Case. On Cold Case, as you can well imagine, we take a look at some of the most infamous and famous cold cases throughout history, and also some things such as Jimi Hendrix's death, which may be a cold case that has never been investigated as a crime. Plus, we've already built up quite the back catalogue of episodes for you to go and binge. So if that's your type of thing, you like ad-free, early access to episodes, and of course your Patreon-only podcast, head over to patreon.com/crimetuesday. So, false flags. What is a false flag? Well, by definition, a false flag is a covert action designed to deceive by making it appear as though another individual or group or nation is responsible for an act which was carried out by the people who seem to be the victims. The term originates from naval warfare, where a ship would fly a false flag of a neutral or friendly country, and only when near the vessel they were approaching, they would then attack. So, what are the purposes of a false flag operation? Firstly, to manipulate public perception. That's you. To justify political, military, or social actions. To discredit or blame an adversary. And they do this by deceiving the public or other nations. The operation is conducted in such a way that the true perpetrators remain hidden, and the blame is assigned to a predetermined targeted entity. And they're normally staged events, incidents like a terrorist attack, or sabotage, or misinformation campaigns. But they're all orchestrated by the alleged attacked country. Now, these secret hidden government experiments, they involve conducting research or tests on individuals without their informed consent or knowledge. These experiments often violate ethical standards and cause physical, psychological, or social harm to the participants. And they do this to obtain scientific, medical, or strategic information that would have took much longer to do had it went through the official channels. But because they do have government approval, they can test these theories or substances without any ethical constraints or repercussions. And they're often conducted under the guise of legitimate research, but with zero transparency to the victims. And there's a reason why those experiments are often merged with false flag tales, because they both involve a country deceiving its own public. And with the hidden experiment example, the individuals are often unaware they're even in an experiment, or they're misinformed about the true nature of the experiment. A great example of this would be the Tuskegee Syphilis Study. It was carried out by the US Public Health Service and the Tuskegee Institute in Alabama. Specifically looking for African American men, they were told that they were participants receiving free healthcare for bad blood, a local term for various ailments. Now, they would test the blood of all the men who applied and decided to go with 399 men who had syphilis and 201 who did not. However, they never informed any of the men that they had syphilis. Therefore, they never even attempted to treat the syphilis, even though penicillin was the standard cure way back in 1947. The point of this was to observe the natural progression of untreated syphilis in black men. It continued for 40 years without the participants' informed consent. And many of those men died from syphilis-related complications. They'd go on to infect others. They'd pass the disease congenitally. When this was all exposed in 1972, there were legal proceedings against the US government. In 1973, a class action was filed on behalf of the study's participants and their families. That lawsuit resulted in a settlement in 1974, where the government agreed to pay $10 million and provide lifetime medical benefits and burial services to all living participants and their immediate families. However, no criminal charges were filed against any government officials involved in the study. In 1997, the President, Bill Clinton, issued a formal apology on behalf of the US government to the survivors and their families for the unethical conduct of the study. The apology acknowledged the profound injustice and pledged to rebuild trust with affected communities. But again, no criminal charges were filed against any government officials. Despite the numerous deaths, and the government knew they would eventually happen. Now, maybe I'm playing old stupid here, but if I gathered a group together of people under false pretenses, and I know in advance what I'm about to do, and I also know that it will result in the death of many of these people, is that not premeditated? Regardless of what other things I'm looking to get out of this, would I be able to almost use a collateral damage argument in a court of law? Or would I spend the rest of my life staring at four walls? I think we all know the answer. So, although government-approved hidden experiments are most definitely a crime, we will only cover one in this series, due to the fact it has kind of a foot in both camps. You may also be wondering, okay, I now know what a false flag is, but how is it a classic crime in a true crime sense? Well, as I said earlier, everything we'll cover in this season is true. And secondly, how is it a crime? Well, strap in. A proven false flag operation carried out by a government is considered a crime for several theoretical and legal reasons. Deception and fraud. At its very core, a false flag operation involves deliberate deception. The government intentionally misleads its citizens or the international community about the true perpetrator of an act which constitutes fraud. That breach of trust undermines the social contract between the government and its people. Abuse of power. Government officials are entrusted with authority to serve the public interest. By orchestrating a false flag operation, that's an abuse of power. It manipulates public opinion and potentially coerces society into actions or policies they wouldn't have otherwise supported. Then there's a violation of domestic laws, because these operations often involve illegal activities like conspiracy, obstruction of justice, and possibly acts of violence or terrorism. All criminal offences under domestic law, regardless of who commits them. Not to mention the human rights violations, the international law breaches, and the undermining of the alleged democratic process. In summary, a government's involvement with a false flag operation constitutes a crime because it involves illegal acts that violate domestic and international laws. It breaches ethical standards and it undermines the foundational principles of justice and democracy. So, a false flag, these are true, these are crimes, and this is Tuesday. I'm Kevin Eustace and welcome to Season 2 of True Crime Tuesday, False Flags. Episode 1, The Main Incident. This season we're going to dive into the shadows of history to uncover the untold stories behind events that changed the world. Some of them, as you'll learn, were horrific tragedies by design. And today, we'll be looking at the tale of the USS Maine, whose mysterious explosion in Havana Harbor in 1898 became the catalyst for the Spanish-American War. You know, it's fascinating how one single event can tip the entire scales of history. One moment, a ship is peacefully anchored. The next, it's the centerpiece of a war declaration. So let's dive in. It was February the 15th, 1898, and a US Navy battleship, the USS Maine, was anchored peacefully in Havana Harbor, Cuba. Without warning, a catastrophic explosion ripped through the entire vessel, killing 266 of the 355 American sailors on board. The incident shocked the entire US and ignited a fervor that would lead to the Spanish-American War. Imagine if you were in Havana that night. A sudden flash, a deafening boom, all the chaos that followed. You must have felt like there was an attack, like you were in a war scenario. To understand the significance of the Maine's explosion, we need to rewind a bit. You see, Cuba was under Spanish colonial rule for centuries. But by the late 19th century, the desire for independence was boiling over. Revolutionary moments, like those led by José Martí, were gaining momentum, fighting for liberation from Spanish control. It's kind of like the simmering tension before a storm. You feel it in the air. You know something is about to give. And the US had significant economic interests in Cuba, with investment in sugar plantations and other industries totaling around $50 million. And that's in 1898. You can only imagine what that's worth now. Also, strategically, Cuba's location was crucial for controlling the Caribbean and protecting the Gulf of Mexico. Think of Cuba like the key to the Caribbean, a gateway that any emerging power would want to control. American public opinion was already swaying against Spain slightly due to reports of harsh Spanish policies towards Cuban rebels and civilians. Stories of concentration camps and brutal crackdowns fueled humanitarian concerns. Coupled with the ideology of manifest destiny, many Americans believed it was their duty to intervene.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
One thing that does stand out when you look at these false flag operations, it's very interesting how often the moral high ground and strategic interests walk hand in hand in international affairs. But let's take a closer look at this naval battleship. The USS Maine was a second-class battleship. Commissioned in 1895, it was armed with four 10-inch guns and six 6-inch guns. A formidable presence meant to showcase American naval power. Its captain, Charles Sigsbee, commanded a crew of 355 officers and enlisted men. She wasn't the biggest ship afloat, but she was a symbol. A floating symbol of American pride. In January 1898, riots erupted in Havana due to tensions between the Spanish loyalists and Cuban insurgents. In order to protect American citizens and property, the US decided to send the USS Maine to Havana as a precautionary measure, really. It was also a diplomatic gesture, signalling we're concerned, but we're not here to be aggressive. It's like sending a friend to keep an eye on things, not to start trouble, but to make sure trouble doesn't start. The arrival of the Maine was met with a mix of suspicion and courtesy. Spanish authorities, whilst uneasy, officially welcomed the ship. The Cuban public, weary from conflict, viewed the American presence with cautious optimism. I can imagine all the local pubs buzzing with speculation. Is that the American Navy? What's next? So in the days before the explosion, the crew went about their routines. Maintenance, drills, the occasional shore leave. Unbeknownst to many, both Spanish and American intelligence agents were active in Havana, monitoring each other's movements. And this really is like the calm before the storm. The undercurrent of espionage adding spice to daily life. And now we come to February the 15th, 1898. At 9:40 p.m., a massive explosion shatters the calm night. Witnesses describe two distinct blasts. The first seemed internal. The second, more powerful blast, tearing the ship apart. The forward section of the Maine was obliterated, and the ship sank rapidly. Picture that chaos. A pitch black night, smoke, fire, cries of sailors thrown into the cold harbour water. Rescue efforts commenced immediately, with nearby ships and locals aiding survivors. Captain Sigsbee survived and sent a telegram to Washington. Maine blown up in Havana Harbor, at 9:40 tonight, destroyed. Many wounded, doubtless more killed or drowned. The captain's composure is quite remarkable in the face of such a tragedy. He focused on reporting the facts. The US, obviously, launched an investigation, and it concluded that an external mine caused the explosion. However, that inquiry faced limitations, restricted access to the wreckage, and reliance heavily on testimonies rather than any concrete evidence. It's like trying to solve a puzzle with half the pieces missing, but the picture's far too important to ignore, so you make them up. Spain conducted its own investigation too, asserting that the explosion was internal, likely due to a coal bunker fire igniting the ship's ammunition. They even invited the US to collaborate, but mutual distrust hindered that operation. Two sides of the same coin, each convinced of their own truth, and neither willing to accept the other's narrative. Various theories emerged. Some speculated sabotage by Cuban rebels to provoke the US intervention. Others blamed accidental causes. The lack of any definitive evidence left room for this speculation and manipulation. And the manipulation part is key. When facts are scarce, theories multiply. It's human nature to fill in the blanks, especially when emotions run high. You'll all be aware we've got that physical, actual blind spot. It's not just a term, it's a real thing. If you get a piece of paper and you draw a cross on it, and a few centimeters away, you draw a circle, close one eye and hold that paper as far as you can, away from your face, and then slowly bring it in whilst focusing on the X. Now at some point, the zero or the O or the circle in your periphery will disappear. But it doesn't disappear. It's reached your blind spot. And what your brain does is it fills in that missing information with the information around it. So it basically says, if everything else around here looks like this, I imagine what's missing is this. And to you, the circle disappears. But in reality, your brain is making you hallucinate in a way. It's filling in the blanks with the information around it, which seems to be how both sides conducted their investigations. Newspapers like the New York Journal and the New York World sensationalized the incident. They would publish bold headlines and lurid stories, often with little regard for accuracy, to inflame public sentiment against Spain. Remember the Maine, to hell with Spain. Catchy, isn't it? That was one of the headlines. And the power of a headline can move nations. Remember the Maine, to hell with Spain. That slogan became a rallying cry, plastered across newspapers and shouted in the streets. It encapsulated the anger, the desire and need for retribution felt by many Americans. It's amazing and a bit frightening how a catchy phrase can steer the course of history. President William McKinley was initially reluctant to go to war. He sought a diplomatic solution. But mounting pressure from Congress, the media, the public, made it all too difficult to avoid conflict. McKinley was caught between a rock and a hard place, a desire for peace and a nation hungry for action. There were very brief and very flimsy attempts at a diplomatic solution with Spain. The US tried to issue ultimatums, demanding Spain grant Cuba independence, and Spain agreed to some concessions, but ultimately would refuse to give up its entire colony. Now you also do need to think, and I don't think this has changed as time's gone on. We have a president there who does not want war. Apparently the most powerful man in the country, being swayed very heavily by Congress. A Congress made of very wealthy men with lots of investment in Cuba. A Congress who would benefit immensely if Spain no longer controlled Cuba. A Congress rallying newspapers to start smear campaigns against the Spanish to rile up the country. Because the best thing that could happen for these people who were invested in Cuba was for the USS Maine to be blown to smithereens. And on April the 25th, 1898, Congress officially declared war on Spain. Retroactive to April the 21st, the decision was met with enthusiasm, and thousands enlisted in the military, eager to fight. War fever had gripped the nation. It was a mix of patriotism, adventure, and a dash of revenge. But the war was brief, lasting just 10 weeks. Key battles occurred in the Philippines and Cuba. The US Navy decimated the Spanish fleet in Manila Bay and Santiago de Cuba. The Rough Riders, led by Theodore Roosevelt, became famous for their charge up San Juan Hill. It's almost ironic. The war started over Cuba, but extended to the other side of the globe in the Philippines. The war ended with the Treaty of Paris on December the 10th, 1898. There, Spain relinquished control of Cuba and ceded Puerto Rico, Guam, and the Philippines to the US for $20 million. In just over 100 years, the US had gone from belonging to Britain, to its own country, to now an empire. The US had stepped onto the world stage in a big way. The victory marked a shift towards American imperialism. The US now had overseas territories, leading to future interventions in Latin America and the Pacific. This is the beginning of the American century, where the US would flex its muscles far beyond its borders. In 1911, a new inquiry suggested an external mine caused the explosion. However, a 1976 investigation by Admiral Hyman G. Rickover concluded it was likely an internal coal bunker fire. And the debate over the true cause continues to this day. It's a historical whodunit with no definitive answer. Some argue that the incident was used as a pretext for war, a wanted war, a classic example of a false flag operation. Others believe it was a tragic accident that was then exploited by those eager for conflict. Either way, the only truth that we do know 100% as fact is a group of people saw this as the prime opportunity to turn the public sentiment against Spain. In fact, to go as far as to declare war. Now, think about that. You're declaring war on something over facts that even today we don't know are true. Memorials to the Maine and its fallen sailors exist across the US, including a mast preserved in Arlington National Cemetery. The incident remains a poignant reminder of the lives lost. These monuments stand silent, yet they speak volumes about sacrifice and the costs of war. The Maine incident is often cited in discussions about media influence on public opinion and the potential for events to be manipulated for political gain. In today's world of instant news and social media, the lessons from 1898 feel more relevant than ever. Literally weeks ago, we had an assassination attempt, apparently, on former President Donald Trump. Now, one of the things that strikes me about the footage of that assassination attempt is how he very quickly stood up, raised a fist with a bloodied ear, and said, "We will not give in," or something along those lines, and created an iconic photograph that could arguably win him the presidency. Now think, odds-wise, of how unlikely that is. Now, I'm not saying it's not real or it's fabricated, or anything along those lines, but what I will say is this. Let's say an assassin, let's say you are the assassin. You wake up, you go out, and your aim is to kill the person you hate the most in the world because they are again running for president. Your assassination attempt not only fails, it creates the image that wins them the presidency again. The odds of that would be quite remarkable. The odds of him surviving would be quite remarkable. There are several things that don't add up with that entire scenario. Again, I'm not trying to throw a conspiracy out there, but I am saying if you watch it for yourself, if you read some of the interesting documents about how his security service team didn't manage to cover the building directly opposite him or the roof directly opposite him, where there was a clean shot to his head, one that was missed, of course, then that means a series of really low-chance things have all amalgamated at the same time to save a very fortunate former president, Donald Trump. Now, assassination attempts have been carried out throughout history. You can find them all on YouTube, etc. Look at Ronald Reagan's assassination attempt. There is one thing in common they all share that isn't shared with the Trump assassination attempt. And that is the conflux of security personnel diving on the person who's trying to be killed to keep them safe. Not in any of them do we see that person fighting off his security team to pump a fist in the air and yell a slogan. It would appear in the midst of chaos and shots being fired that President Trump is confident enough to know when the shooter has stopped, to stand up, to put his head above the pulpit, and to give a slogan speech. That's quite a skill. But moving away from superhero-like powers to the main incident again. Over a century later, the main sinking remains shrouded in mystery. It serves as a case study of the complexities of war, the power of propaganda, and the consequences of hasty decisions based on almost zero information. Perhaps the real lesson here is caution. Question. Investigate. Understand before we act. The key phrase from this episode for me is the line, Congress declared war on Spain. Congress, the wealthy congressman who had an investment in Cuba. Also, it's rather beneficial, don't you think, that as opposed to trying to find the root cause of how these servicemen were killed, you instead declare war based on hearsay. And less than 12 months later, you own Cuba. You own Puerto Rico, Guam, and the Philippines, and you're basically now an empire. Now, it may just be me, maybe I'm naive, but in terms of like for likeness, and we've seen it play out in recent conflicts, there will be an attack on a city, for example, the Israel-Hamas situation, and then there'll be a retaliatory attack, done in the full knowledge of who perpetrated the initial attack. Here we have almost zero facts about what the cause was for that explosion. Yet less than a year later, America now owns its first overseas lands. Plural. Not just Cuba. There is a Latin phrase very applicable to wartime thinking. And that's qui bono, or who benefits. In this situation, the only real people who benefit from a war with zero evidence for that war to take place are those people in Congress who declared the war, who lent on the newspapers to start throwing out some anti-Spanish rhetoric. There are people involved in this that make this more suspicious than most of the false flags we will cover. But we chose the main incident as episode one as an easy step into the world of false flags. Not only is it one of the first documented theories in terms of why this took place, but also it shows that a false flag can also be opportunistic, if that's the case. So, for example, if the ship did blow up due to a mistake by the staff of the ship, somebody has seized on that opportunity for what reason? It's a great question, and one that's answered only a few months later when America now owns its first overseas territories, as well as Cuba. And also, with Cuba being under Spanish rule, the levies and taxes being paid by these American business and congressmen would have been rather large compared to if it was US territory. So therefore, once America claimed Cuba, their profits went through the roof. Now, considering just around 50 years after this date, were introduced to Adolf Hitler, and an actual reason to go to war, this almost seems like a war based on the whole premise, Steve said this. Doesn't that seem farcical to you? Unless somebody knew what the financial outcome of that war would be. But the key lesson from today's episode in terms of what we're going to look at in future episodes is that a false flag doesn't necessarily need to be predetermined and planned out. It can be opportunistic. It can be a terrible event happening by sheer carelessness or incompetence or coincidence, where you would expect a Congress who are meant to be looking after the public interest to be thinking, what's happened here? Let's investigate, let's fact find, and then let's make a rational decision. Instead, declare outright war based on next to nothing. If ever there was a time to ask cui bono, it would be with this main incident and our starter for season two. I hope you enjoyed our beginning of season two, and next week we are going to look once again at a proven false flag, this time a co-effort by the special friendship of the US and the UK, who go out and commit a false flag in order to remove a democratically appointed senior leader. I genuinely think after doing this one episode, the one thing we're all going to leave this season with is the knowledge of just how power-hungry, money-hungry, and empathy-lacking that some of the most powerful leaders in the world can be, if indeed it's them pulling the strings. I don't think at any point in this season we're going to have anything heartwarming. If anything, we're going to leave knowing the absolute depravity man can sink to when it comes to power and money. Also, right now in 2024, I can't think of a more fitting time in recent memory to have a series like this to remind people just how you can be manipulated, controlled, and lied to by your own government. But of course, believe everything they say during the campaign trail, because that's obviously going to be their whole agenda throughout. That was sarcasm. Welcome to England. I look forward to speaking to you again next Tuesday for another True Crime Tuesday. And as I say, next week's false flag is a joint effort, because most nations are aware of false flags. And next week, we get to teaming up. And it's the good old special relationship, doing something absolutely immoral, illegal, and proven as true. Until then, stay safe and take care.
Get 15% off a set of Brake Best Select, Select Pro, or Import Direct brake pads and two rotors now at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly!